listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. On the west steps of California's Capitol in Sacramento, Governor-elect Gavin Newsom will take the oath of office at noon. Let's go back to my colleague there, CAP Radio's Ben Adler. And Ben, I'm just seeing some of the beginnings of the program. It looks like the national anthem will be performed by the director of Sacramento State's Vocal Jazz Program. That's a special honor today. And tell me a little bit more about what we're going to see and hear.
Well, we're going to hear some performances from Voices of Destiny, Greater Zion Church Family in Compton, and I heard them rehearsing earlier, and their harmonies are really, really well done. We're going to hear an invocation from Stephen A. Privett, who's the president of Verbum Dei High School in Watts and president emeritus of University of San Francisco, a special presentation from Los Senzontles from Richmond, and I heard them. It's a Latin musical group, and they sounded very nice as well. And then Chief Justice Tani Kantil Saka-Uwe will administer the oath of office to Governor-elect Newsom at about 12:02, timed for the lunchtime TV newscast. The ceremony itself is supposed to get underway about a quarter after 11.
All right, we'll join you again. Thanks, Ben.
No problem.
That's my CAP Radio colleague Ben Adler at the Capitol for today's inauguration live coverage. CAP Radio's and KQED's begins at 11. Gavin Newsom published a book in 2013 titled Citizenville. It focused on engaging people with digital tools to get them more politically involved. And I talked with his co-author, Lisa Dickey. I asked her why Gavin Newsom wanted to explore this subject.
There's always the question of participation. I think that's a really big thing. It comes out every time we have a presidential election and people say, well, only X percent of the electorate voted. And then people wring their hands and say, well, how can this be? It's so important. And we've got to, how can anybody abstain from voting when these things are really critical? And then it goes from that also down into, well, are people taking part in the political process even at a smaller level, at a more granular level, at a very local level? And I think that's an ongoing problem in this country. And I think one of the reasons why he wanted to focus on how do we use technology to do this, and there's several places in the book where he says, well, how can we make this more almost enjoyable for people? Like, how can we turn this into something where people want to be involved because there's almost a game-like element to it? And that's partly why the book was called Citizenville. If you think about Farmville, which is the Zynga game that we sort of took the Ville part and made the title out of that, Farmville was something where it's like somebody takes care of their little patch of land online, and it's completely all, just online. It's not a real piece of farm. And he said, well, what if we had something where people were literally taking care of their neighborhoods? It's like you have you drive down the highway and you see the signs that says this stretch of highway is taken care of by so-and-so. And he said, how can we, use technology and how can we have people really getting engaged and involved in a way that sort of combines these two things? It combines good citizenship and it combines the notion of having something that is technologically engaging for people. Because people, honestly, we're just obsessed with technology. We're looking at our smartphones all the time. And so I think his thing is, how do we get, people are doing this all the time. How can we create something where people obviously care about what their government is doing, because people get upset when the government does something they don't like, or they get upset when the government's not addressing something they think that the government should be addressing. And so his thing is, there's got to be a way to find a sweet spot where we're doing both of those things.
The concepts that he had, perhaps for a town or a community or a city, now have to expand to deal with the state of California. So how does his way of thinking to you translate to such a massive scale?
To my mind, one of the things that he focuses on in the book is just how to get people communicating with each other about some of these issues that we all care about. And how can we, meaning we as the government, which is him, how can we make this easier for people to do? And so, I think there are building blocks of society. I mean, you start with something very small. You have your neighbors, and then you have the people on your street and the people on your block and then the people in your town. And I think to his mind, getting the communication going at every stage of these building blocks is the way to, manage something as huge as California. I mean, as you say, it's just a tremendously large, the economy and the number of people that you're dealing with. But he starts from the very basic perspective of, what is all of this technology about? It's about how we communicate, and how can government help people understand how to communicate to it and communicate among themselves about what they would like to see their government do. And he starts from that perspective and then moves it up.
What do you expect his priorities to be as he lays out both in his inaugural address and in the State of the State address where he's going to begin his term as governor?
If you look at Gavin's sort of history and his record of what he did as the mayor of San Francisco, of some of the initiatives he tried to put forth as lieutenant governor, you know, I think it's very clear that this is a guy who wants to make progress to push us, you know, further into the 21st century. You know what I mean? I mean, he's not the kind of guy who's like, all right, here we are and we're the status quo and let's sort of rumble along and let me make sure I don't make any mistakes. That's not who this person is. This is a guy who really wants to use his position to make Californians' lives better. I mean, honestly, that's what he's about. I mean, the other thing I think that's really extraordinary about Gavin is that he's a successful businessman. He's got his wineries. He doesn't need to be in government service. You know, he does it. And he was in the lieutenant governor's office for 8 years because he wants to do this. He wants to make people's lives better. And that's really, that's what he's about. And whatever that entails and whatever, however the means he can do that, that's what he's going to try to do.
Is there a reworking in your mind in any way about Citizenville or a sequel where the thesis of the book moves to looking ahead?
I mean, I would love for there to be a sequel. I think that remains to be seen. That would be a fantastic thing in my view. And I think that Gavin would probably approach it in a similar fashion than he did the others, to sort of even, you could even go back to some of these people who are just absolutely giants in the field of technology. I mean, the list of who we interviewed is a long and impressive list of people, you know, and to go back and sort of say to them, okay, well, where are we now? Have we made progress and have we not? You know, he's obviously going to be very busy being governor. I'm not sure, you know, how much more he could do, particularly in the beginning. But, you know, I think that Gavin has shown himself certainly, you know, even back, like, as I say, as mayor of San Francisco, and he also talked about this in the book, about making sure everybody has equal access, or at least everybody has access to you know, the online world and access to smartphones and access to the tools that they need in order to be to function in today's extremely high tech society. So he's always sort of been about that. In terms of the dangers of online, like obviously there's a whole lot that's happened between 2013 and 2018 in the conversation about how are these things being used. And so, you know, that's something I feel certain that he is. I mean, obviously, everybody's aware of it, but I'm certain that he's having conversations with people about it and talking, you know, and, you know, doing what he does, which is getting the latest information from the people who know it best and then synthesizing it in the way that he's very good at doing.
Do you have a favorite story about him or a favorite memory from your time together?
You know, I will say one of the things I do love about him, he did this a couple times in the book. And actually, the very first story of chapter one of the book, he does this. And it's a wonderful quality he has the ability to laugh at himself. And so the very first story of chapter one talks about where he's sitting in his mayor's office in San Francisco, and he sits down with the president of Estonia. And the president of Estonia comes in, and he's basically kind of bragging to this guy and saying, oh, well, we have these vendors working on, you know, how are we going to enable parking meters to, you know, people to pay for their parking by using their smartphones. So yeah, we're working on that. That's going to be coming along in the next year or so. And the president of Estonia looks at him, and there's this moment where he thinks, wait, what's happening? And the president of Estonia says, we've had that already for years. And Gavin's like, oh God, you know, and it's this moment where he's like, basically not only saying, oh gosh, San Francisco is behind, but he's unafraid to sort of say, well, I kind of looked like a jackass there. And it was funny, you know, it's just, he's unafraid to laugh at himself. He's unafraid to sort of say, hey, you know what? I thought I knew what was going on and I didn't. And I think that's also an extremely rare quality for a lot of politicians, you know. But so he does that in a couple times in the book when you know, whenever he's sort of called out on something where it's like, oh, I got that wrong. He's not afraid to say that. And so that's always makes me laugh thinking about that story.
That was Lisa Dickey, co-author of Gavin Newsom's 2013 book, Citizenville. Lisa has co-authored or ghostwritten at least 18 books, many of them bestsellers. She's kept a relationship with Gavin Newsom. So I asked whether she might become an advisor or somehow join his staff. And she was very polite, but she said, that's a question I don't want to answer at this time. On the phone to anticipate more of what we might hear today in the inauguration of Gavin Newsom is Harmeet Dhillon. She owns a law practice called Dhillon Law Group. She is the former vice chairwoman of the California Republican Party. Ms. Dhillon, I'm so glad to have you with us today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am not hearing you at the moment, but I'm going to jump ahead into my first question. There you are. Glad to have you join us. Give me some of your reaction to what Gavin Newsom is announcing as his early priorities, a focus on early childhood, on the housing crisis in the state, and wildfires. What's your view of what he's lining up as his top issues?
Well, the issues are certainly attractive ones and affect a lot of Californians. I think the real problem that anybody being honest about this would say is that the state does not have a huge budget surplus, as all the news reports are saying. We have crushing pension obligations that are going to bankrupt the state. And so where's the money to pay for all of these things? It all sounds good, but for example, imposing 6-month parental leave on small businesses is going to be financially ruinous and drive even more businesses out of California. And providing more and more benefits to people without cost is going to encourage more and more people to come into our state dependent on the welfare aspects of the state, which in turn is a death spiral. So the taxpayers of the state and middle-class people are leaving because of all of the issues that Gavin Newsom is inheriting. They're not his fault, but you're then going to compound that problem of taxpayers and the tax base fleeing the state, corporate and personal, by doing additional spending that is going to be massive in scale. And so those are my concerns as a taxpayer. And frankly, as a business owner, I see less and less emphasis from Sacramento on how you're going to encourage businesses to come into the state and people to come into the state, and more emphasis on how you're going to distribute welfare benefits to everybody in the state. And that just doesn't add up financially.
The new governor will have a Democratic supermajority in the legislature. Where might Republicans be effective in shifting where some legislation might go, or bringing it to a point where there can be compromise and, more importantly, progress on some of these issues?
Well, the Republicans can try to persuade some of their more reasonable Democratic colleagues to look at the balancing of the pocketbook and be fiscally prudent. But what we saw out of the last couple of sessions where the Democrats had a lot of control as well was just out of control spending that Governor Brown had to constantly veto. And, you know, one of the problems on the Democratic side is very few of those members are people from the business community. They're union officials, party hacks. And so, you know, they're not people who are used to balancing a budget or writing, you know, signing the front of a check. And so I think this is a huge problem. You know, hopefully Gavin Newsom will be a little more fiscally prudent than some of the members of his party who are running the legislative agenda. But, you know, Medicare for all, universal health care, I mean, these are $400 billion projects, and the state doesn't have that kind of money. And the state is, in fact, encouraging policies, including illegal immigration and other policies that are encouraging people who are not net contributors to the bottom line to enter the state.
Harmeet, thanks so much for a few moments here. You're going to rejoin us during the special inaugural broadcast. I appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you a little later this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is Harmeet Dhillon. On the phone now, Joe Eskenazi, who is a political reporter and columnist based in San Francisco at Mission Local. He's covered the city for more than 20 years, and certainly during the time of Gavin Newsom being mayor of the city. Hi, Joe. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks for asking me on the show.
Back in 2009, you wrote that San Francisco is spectacularly mismanaged and arguably the worst-run big city in America. That would sound like you don't have a lot of faith in how this new governor is going to handle the state, but I'll put that question to you. What do you think?
I think that my article that I always want to point out, I co-wrote with Benjamin Wax, and he deserves much of the credit for it. I think the article held up well. I think that it will be interesting to see what Gavin Newsom does, but the complaints leveled in that article hold up very well a decade later.
How is he different now in watching him advance to the lieutenant governor's office and then this campaign for governor?
I think the biggest differences are in his station in life. I think Gavin Newsom now is a older, married father of four. And, you know, perhaps I think that might be the biggest difference. Many of the problems that come out of Gavin Newsom's style of governing are personality driven. And if he is a more measured, wiser, older person, some of those problems could be mitigated.
I'm so glad you're going to stay with us, because there's much more that we can talk about, Joe. And you, too, will be joining us during our special inaugural broadcast. So stand by for a little later in the morning, okay?
Sure.
All right. Thank you again. That is Joe Eskenazi from Mission Local. And that's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our producers are Jen Picard, Cody Drabble, and Bert Johnson. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer today is Evan Matzler. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Special coverage of the inauguration of California's next governor begins at 11 here on CAP Radio and KQED. You can hear it streaming live at capradio.org. We'll be back with you then, and thanks for joining us.